The Around the NFL Podcast. Initiate phase three.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room surprisingly filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan. Why is it surprising?
Well, first of all, Mr. Man, Mr. Paternity Leave, I thought that you would be time with young Walker. Instead, you said, I got to get back in here and talk more Pats.
Well, people say they love their job. I mean it. I want to be here. I mean, plus, Ellis, my daughter, she's taking her nap right now. It's a good time. Just hop in. I miss you guys. I want to talk some
football. That's sweet. I've gotten some distressing texts from your wife being like, where's Greg?
Stop. She doesn't know you're
Have you maybe had too much time?
I'm a little worried that she knows Dan's cell phone number.
I'm refreshed. Well, Michael Bennett knows it. I'm refreshed after a couple days off and 4 days sober now, so I'm feeling really good about myself. How are you guys doing? Wes and Mark, you both look healthy as well.
I slept 12 hours last night.
Wow.
Which was more than I slept all of Super Bowl week combined.
Wes actually he's been cranking right through. So you're just hours away from your three-day weekend coming up.
Oh, what is going to happen with you?
Big plans.
A lot of cornhole?
Well, you know.
Do they involve the Santa Monica police?
And Mark, you are wearing, let's talk about Mark. He's wearing a Stripey McStriperson, which I thought had been sent to the circular file, but apparently not. And then underneath it, a free NFL.com t-shirt.
I just don't care anymore.
I see you've done as much laundry as I have.
And this is a throwaway shirt, but when you go unbutton with t-shirt underneath, it can be, it's more like just a rag that you'd wash your car with.
Mark is single-handedly trying to bring back the mid-90s open button-down shirt with a t-shirt underneath type.
Well, that's when I stopped paying attention to
It's a little Cobain-y. It's a little Cobain-y. But that's
Oh, sorry. Cool. I'm a little too much like a music legend in my dressing in the off-season.
All right. So you would think we'd have nothing to talk about, but that's not even close. And in fact, you know, screw you for thinking that, because we got a lot to talk about, all right? This is our first post-Super Bowl show. Greg sitting again. Maybe it's easy to get to work when you could fly around on a throne of ease.
Yeah, I'm not going to deny it.
Notice also, I would not have pegged Greg as an aviator sunglasses guy.
He sits on his throne of ease. That is weird throne of ease music today.
What is that?
I like
you
that.
Might have to take a second shot of that one.
I like
I was thinking more like the harp. It's like, bing, 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 bing. Okay. It's something more a little jaunty.
Game of Thrones music. Game of Thrones season 5 is back soon. It's, you know.
Okay. Well, working on it.
Might have overthought
it. I can no longer deny the throne of ease, but part of what's making it so easy is the NFL Network just replaying the game over and over, and the nonstop Patriots programming. It's been on nonstop
in
my house.
It's been great for us because Dan, a notorious, he'll blast his television at like volume 120, like he's the only one in the room, off the entire week because he cannot stomach a second of it.
Well, you did say when we were planning this, and a little bit shot of the volume of my television, that was unnecessary.
That's accurate.
But, I will say that when we were planning the show this morning, that Greg, one of his takeaways, and we're going to talk about a little more about the game, the big Patriots win, is that the game is still all over the place, and you can't get away from it. I got away from it just fine.
Yeah, you turned it up. Yeah. I'm serious. It was at the front of my wife watches the Today Show, all sorts of shows, the parade. It's getting a longer life, I think, because of all the elements of the game than a normal game. Is that crazy?
Well, it was a crazy assessment.
I feel like it stuck with me more than any of the Super Bowls that we've been to live. It might have been the game itself, which
and a lot of
next
it's
to
football.
You was crazy.
Right, yeah. It's a lot just football, talking about that play call, Pete Carroll's comments, Belichick's comments. I'm saying all these comments and kind of rehashing everything that went out in the game. It feels like it's got a longer life than some great other games like Ravens 49 or stuff.
Right, but it's also a massive personal triumph for you. So you're just sort of glowing, and you can see the glow on you. I think it has nothing to do with new fatherhood. Mm. It has only to do with the new England Patriots.
Yeah, you're like on maternity leave because you're pregnant. You're glow because you're so happy.
I feel like this is the year where, I guess to back up Greg's argument, people are writing about things that are germane to the discussion, whereas in previous years, other websites are just trying to crank out like PFT-level content that, you know, the quotes don't really mean anything, but we have to talk about the Super Bowl
anyway.
There's
nonstop analysis over, you know, the percentages of whether it was smart to run. I mean, just stuff like that.
What's the way it ended?
Forever.
Yeah.
All right, so we will be digging back into Super Bowl 49 in a segment we're going to call One Last Thing.
I have many more than one thing.
which will give us the stage to add some things maybe we didn't get to on Sunday night show because it was kind of a fever dream after getting a few days to think about the game. And Greg has said he has several things he wants to get out there, so we're going to get to all of that. It's going to be a four-hour podcast today. We're also going to hit up Wes's big old top 25 free agent list that he put up on the site earlier this week. So we're going to go through Wes's list of the top 25 guys ready to hit the market if teams don't lock them up first. Many of those guys will never hit the open market, but it's still fun right now to take a look at who may. So we'll go through that list. And if we get a chance, we might not be able to, but this will be something we get into as the weeks pass. We are right now giving our off-season forecast of all 32 teams. We have a couple of them up already, a few up already, including both the Super Bowl teams. So we might get to that. If not, our next show, we will handle it. But to start, we got to check in behind the glass. T-Day, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, guys? And yeah, I mean, the last podcast, sorry to everyone who had an issue with the audio quality, but we were at the stadium to like 2 a.m. I had to finish up the pod in the back of a taxi cab.
Yeah, so hey, you can pipe down. That's a labor of love. We love doing that. Thank you for listening.
Everyone else that works for NFL Media, and I'm not saying that we were working harder, maybe I am, was at like the post NFL Super Bowl party at that time. We didn't have to tape the podcast Sunday night.
Oh.
And then, Greg, just stay out of it. And then, on top of it, he'll go nameless, but somebody tweeted, like, you guys should be ashamed of yourselves for not getting it up sooner. What? We were still at the damn stadium at 2 a.m. walking around, asking security guards how to get out of there.
Who was it?
I like that.
Maybe we'll let you know privately, Wes, because I know you got a hankering to block him.
He's considering blocked.
I mean it. I like it that people are so in love with our podcast that they're upset they're not getting enough fast. I look at the positive.
All right. TD.
Yep.
Let's do some news, buddy.
Hey, I love you guys. Let's go, man. Let's go.
And that was from the NFL Films recap inside the NFL of the Super Bowl. And it really is great stuff. Edelman, though, is one Pat I can get on board with. Cool guy. Forget Gronk. Forget Tom Brady. Edelman's a man.
So you're going against Connor Orr, who pretty much chose the Seahawks to win by 21 points just because he didn't like Julian Edelman personally.
Julian Edelman, a Tinder superstar this week.
Mark, you on Tinder?
Leave it at that.
I am not on Tinder.
All right. We'll start with Bill Belichick, who, of course, and this was interesting because Pete Carroll makes what many people say is the worst play call in Super Bowl history, leading to the game-ending interception. This obviously has a great consequence for Bill Belichick, who goes from losing potentially three straight Super Bowls with Tom Brady to winning the Super Bowl. And don't forget that Pete Carroll was the coach of New England before Belichick got there. So Carroll did a good service by getting out of the way for Bill. So maybe that explains why Bill Belichick is getting behind Pete Carroll and defending Pete Carroll for the play call that was made that led to the INT. Here's a quote from Belichick, who was on WEEI in Boston on Wednesday. I think there's been a lot of criticism that I don't think anywhere close to being deserved or founded. That football team is very good and they're very well coached. Pete does a great job. Malcolm and Brandon on that particular play just made a great play.
Exactly Frank Caliendo over here, Caliendo.
he went on to say that the criticism is totally out of line, made by people who are not qualified to make it. Chris Wessling, I'll start with you. Does Bill Belichick have a point?
Sure. I mean, I don't have any kind of hot takes on this. I see Belichick's side. I don't think he's talking about fans. I think he's talking about people in the media who are questioning this without a deep knowledge of everything that went into that situation. And basically, I think Bill Belichick is saying Pete Carroll is one of the best coaches in football history, so leave him alone.
Yeah, whenever you go to one of these like owners meetings, whatever, you realize the walls break down and the guys are friends. They just want to talk. They're in a fraternity together. It's a very tight-knit thing. It's like when we go to the Super Bowl and you talk to someone else, some other writer, and you're like, oh, my God, will Antrell Roll ever shut up? It's like you have that shared pain. Belichick knows what it's like to get everything questioned.
Well, Belichick also went out of his way to talk up Carroll as one of the best coaches of the last 25 years.
He is.
Yeah, and he is. And that he's learned a lot from him from afar, and he knows how tough it was to deal with that Seahawks team. So he's trying to help him out there. He also understands the logic behind what Carroll did, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense that they went away from their strength. Bill Belichick in that same interview stressed, we had our goal line people in. We're going to have eight big guys in to block them. And he said, look, I don't know if we're going to stop Lynch, but I'd like to see our chances in that spot. He's like, that's as good a situation as I could have put my team in for Lynch running. And you have to think back, and I'm sure maybe this was a part of it. Lynch did get stopped in short yardage two other times in that game. Forget about what he did over the course of the season.
Or the play right before?
Well,
he stuck it in from 8 yards.
He almost did, but that was a different people on the field at that point in a different goal line setup. Two different drives stopped because Lynch got stopped on 3rd and 1 and 3rd and 2, the first drive of the game and another drive where they were near the goal line.
Well, they also wisely brought in the defensive back for Akeem Ayers, who ended up making the game-changing interception. So
yeah, that was a good post you wrote there, Wes.
Yeah, Jason Hartilius, one of our producers, brought that to my attention, and we got Gold Standard actually was working in the video department tonight. We got him to cut the video, and we made a post out of it, and I don't think anyone else had that information.
Wow, what a great How the Sausage Gets Made breakdown by Chris Wessling there. The umbrella of NFL media, powerful indeed.
And maybe part of it is Belichick, I don't know, putting focus more on the player and the play than the coach making a bad decision. And it was a bad decision. It didn't work. But when you watch the coach's film of that play, Butler is breaking on the ball well before Russell Wilson throws it. So it is an incredible anticipation play. And he didn't go run and knock down the play like a lot of cornerbacks would. He didn't bobble it and it hit the ground. There wasn't any big-time replay. He went for it, and he made the play. It was one of the greatest all-time plays in Super Bowl history.
The more angles you watch of that play, the more TD is wrong on the Damashek podcast when he said it was a mistake by the Seahawks, not a great play by the Patriots.
Whoa.
That is
a great play by Malcolm Butler.
I have completely changed. I watch the NFL films inside the NFL, and that shows how great of a play Butler makes.
Like, that's the Patriots snaring.
He went for broke.
Out of the jaws of
he
the
went
feet.
For broke and he got it.
That's
he
what I mean. Like when we think of Kirk Gibson's home run or whatever, this will make Dan happy. There a little baseball. People don't talk about it because Dennis Eckersley hung a slider or whatever. You talk about the great play Gibson made. It was the great play that Malcolm Butler of all people made.
All right. That was an accurate replay of that World Series. It was like 12 people in the crowd.
Wait, there was 12 people at the crowd at Dodger
Stadium? In this soundbite, there's like, it's like this like little lazy backyard baseball play, and it's like there was one of the loudest stadium scenarios. That
okay?
It's like a low level little league affair.
Maybe 85 people there. Okay. All right, moving on. Mark, we'll move on to the Cleveland Browns, where Josh Gordon will not be in their plans for at least the 2015 season, and maybe forever. The NFL announced Tuesday that the troubled wide receiver has been suspended without pay for at least 1 year for violating the NFL policy and program for substances of abuse. And, the Browns then, Mark, came out and fired off a statement that showed that they're pissed. I think they stood behind this guy. They waited patiently for him to get back, and then he got busted again. And now who knows where he is? Let me ask you, Mark. Are you going to see Josh Gordon on the Browns again?
No, I think, I don't know. I could see him coming back to the league. It's like we talked about on NFL Now, Wes and I yesterday, that it's maybe a Justin Blackman is the closest model for this and how the team wants to deal with it. There's no reason to cut him. He's not absorbing any salary, but
Well, there is a reason. The reason
right,
is
well,
you're sick of this.
Sure,
but like,
I think
we got to move on.
I think they're going to be done with him because I feel like this last chance was his next chance.
Why cut him and watch him lead the league in receiving with the Steelers?
That I agree. I think
you don't have to cut him.
You haven't been through all this to finally – you pumped millions of dollars into this guy. I think there's no expectations. You go out and you draft and you find wide receivers the best you can, but you don't just cut him free. What statement can the Browns make about anything right now? He's in the netherworld, but don't have him get signed by the Chiefs and go for 1,300 yards two seasons.
You made
now.
The same point a year ago, which I was on board with, and you're making the same point now, which is something you could still get behind. But I would think at a certain point the team's going to say, yeah, maybe he becomes the next Chris Carter. But as things stand, he just stands as a black mark that, you know, for this franchise, they're just trying to get away from the dark cloud. And he's one of the big dark clouds that continues to hang out.
I just think it's bad business to put, what is he, 23? guy has potentially 10 more playing years in his body. He's not even, he doesn't even log miles over the last two seasons to say, hey, we're going to change everyone's perception about us by cutting him. And then a smarter team like the Patriots, frankly, that could care less about his, they'll pick him up and he'll thrive. Oh. I don't want to see that happen as a someone that follows that
Josh,
team.
Josh Gordon is not the only black mark in this organization. It's not limited to the players either. It right. goes a lot higher than that. So let's not act
right, well,
like
there's an investigation into the texts that were sent down to the sideline. That's going
let's
on
not
right
act
now.
Like getting rid of Josh Gordon solves everything for this franchise.
Well, they don't have right. to make a decision for a year. We're talking about something that, you know,
that's what I'm saying.
They
don't
have to
do something emotional right now. That's all.
They won't. He's going to be suspended. We won't hear about him. It's we're going to be talking about the next winner of the Super Bowl before they have to do anything with Josh Gordon.
Well, this offseason's a train wreck for this franchise. You've got Manziel going into rehab. You've got Gordon suspended for at least a year, so your leading receiver from 2 years ago who led the NFL, your first-round draft pick, supposed to be your quarterback of the future, and then the offensive coordinator who made Brian Hoyer into a legitimate NFL starter left. So you've got a disastrous.
And your GM is under investigation, and your owner is, you know, littered with question marks. I mean, it's whatever hope was generated a year ago in the offseason, it's the opposite.
And right let's hope the Johnny Manziel thing is legit and he went to rehab for the right decisions, and it wasn't a business decision. It wasn't a decision to save face with teammates, and he's actually getting help, and he has a real problem that they're trying to fix. And maybe, just maybe, if you want to try to look at the bright side, he comes back and he gets his head on straight, and you can maybe salvage something of his career. Because I think that the one thing with Manziel is everyone's very quick to say it's over for Manziel, and let's move on, let's draft Marcus Mariota. He's still your 22nd overall pick in last May's draft. So if he shows a renewed commitment, maybe you can get behind him and build something, and he shows you something. I know he didn't do much last year to get you excited, but I don't know.
But a smart team, that's fine. But a smart team with all these players we're talking about can't rely on anything.
Right, and
you've got to go get everything. They won't.
They won't be.
But it's the same argument with Josh Gordon. You're saying you don't want to let him go and then let someone else make something of him.
I would never let Manziel go.
I think the difference is Johnny Manziel, you have major questions about his personal life and maturity and about his football. Whereas Josh Gordon, it's really just about maturity. It's not about his football.
All right, Dan Quinn was announced very quickly after his team lost in the Super Bowl. Dan Quinn became the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. In his introductory press conference, he said the goal of the team is to play fast and physical. Greg, is that what every coach says? Yeah.
Right. Well, that's my thing. He's really going against league trends because slow and passive has been the hot new thing around the NFL.
Yeah.
People have been doing that, but Quinn's going to turn that on his head. He's going to go fast and physical.
Mike Smith, God rest his soul, his Hard Knocks proclamation that they were going to be the toughest team in football didn't really take this season. So now they have a new coach that says fast and physical. But this, a lot of people seem to be happy with this hire. And I know Chris and I believe, yeah, Chris, you spent a good amount of time and talked to him during Super Bowl week. This is a good hire?
I think it is. I would say for the second year in a row, the person on the Seahawks beat in the Super Bowl for around the NFL has really fallen for Dan Quinn. He was my favorite figure at the Super Bowl. He's charismatic. He sits down. He looks you in the eye. Explains everything. We'll tell you what he's going to do, and you can tell the players absolutely adore him.
I felt that way about him last year, and I think that he did talk about teaching in that thing too. And one thing, and this is a little tiny thing, but from us, Wes and I sitting with him, he teaches even writers in 10 minutes something that you wouldn't know about the team. And I like that about him. I mean, there's something about that that's genuine. And he also showed the ability to bring a good staff with him. He brought Kyle Shanahan. I think that's a huge hire for this offense. It suggests they're not going to tail off. This is what this team's still about. And I love the idea of Matt Ryan paired with Kyle Shanahan.
Right. He, unlike Gus Bradley, who leaves Seattle and joins a team in total disarray with no quarterback and no offense, Dan Quinn's not going to come in and fix your offense, but he's got Matt Ryan, he's got Kyle Shanahan. All he has to do is improve what's been one of the worst defenses in the league for 2 years to a mid-level Jaguars-like defense like Gus Bradley's done over there, and they're probably right in the mix for playoffs. Right?
Are we concerned about the Dan Quinn, Thomas Dimitroff hair disparity situation and how that could create problems?
Well, they gave Quinn full control over the 53-man roster, so maybe Blank likes his men to be with less hair.
Well, that, so you're saying that was almost to compensate for the hair differential. Cause that, it does,
I had no idea what I'm saying.
No, it comes up a lot with Wes and Dan, especially. Dan is, you know, probably the best hair of the group.
Probably.
Definitely has the best hair of the group. Wes
got Patra beat.
Has the least amount of hair of the
group.
Well, I have
zero.
There's been a lot of tension. Been a lot of tension over
has there?
Years.
I well, thought is, in this room, no, never. There's never been tension.
Classic case of the boss flying in for paternity leave to stir
you know,
the pot.
Don't you have a kid to raise?
You just brought up the whole hair tension.
There is,
well, not within
dynamic.
Our group.
I was trying to back
Every
you up.
6 months or so, Dan tries to get me to grow my hair out just for his entertainment.
No,
well,
wait
you
a
did,
second.
You followed that cue.
I think that 1994 ER Anthony Edwards is a great look for you, and you do try it every few months, and then you give up on it.
Well, I'm still not over the fact that I first went bald. I shaved out of pure laziness, and I couldn't leave my island, and there were no barbershops on the island, so I just let it. You
and
know.
You know, I met your brother. Which was it?
Nick.
Nick Wesley.
Middle brother.
Very nice guy. And two things about Nick. First thing about Nick, immediately you know that they're brothers because they started arguing about something that, like, I couldn't even believe the argument was happening. It was like how much of a fan Nick was of the Bengals, and Nick said he wasn't, and Wes said you still were. There was a lot of – there was some heat there. Nick, within a couple minutes of meeting me, said, hey, I listened to your podcast finally on Tuesday.
A southern accent.
And I was like, oh, really? He's like, it sucked.
No, he's listened to many, I thought.
No, that's the first one he ever
Oh, really?
To.
I was like, all right, cool. And then we started talking about hair, and Nick has hair, but it's not all the way there at this point. And he pointed his head and said, this is what Wes's hair would look like if he grew it out, which I found interesting.
I preferred to point to my head and tell him that's what his head's going to look like in 4 years.
Mm. Nick I love is the Wesley kind of brothers.
Nick is the potster of
yes,
the group.
He is.
I've met all the brothers. He's... I don't know what we could compare him to.
Well, when I hung
he's
out
the
with the brothers,
Browner,
yeah,
I don't know if
he would whisper in my ear when I was with all the Wesleyan brothers, and he's like, "Go over and tell Wesleyan and brother B this, and just then just stand back and watch." And
yeah,
like,
that's actually true.
Jordan, LeBron, and then bang, 48 minutes later, they're done arguing.
No. Phil was the one who instigated that. Nick is the one who likes to argue. He's the argument.
Who would win in a brawl between the Wesleyan brothers and the Wahlbergs?
I'm taking the Wahlbergs.
I'm going Wesleyan.
How many Wahlbergs are?
Wahlbergs are soft, man.
There's like six of them, I think.
Wahlbergs are soft.
Mark looked pretty big there on the Super Bowl.
We've got a wild card.
Yeah.
Who, you?
No. We do have a wild
card. Okay, actually, I think I know where you're going with that. Say no more. All right, moving on. The Redskins. The Redskins. The Washington Redskins wrote a letter to their fans entitled, or it was... entered with a greeting, dear premium club member, I'm sorry, I can't talk. And then it goes into a general intro, and then it goes a little like this. Head coach Jay Gruden, new general manager Scott McLaughlin, and defensive coordinator Joe Barry will lead a nucleus of Ryan Kerrigan, DeSean Jackson, plus Pro Bowlers Trent Williams and Alfred Morris. The Redskins are poised to rebound next season. Someone's missing from that graph of stars on the team, and his name is Robert Griffin III. This all seems something type of story. It's a nothing story, but at the same time, it's like, come on, you don't even put the guy in the paragraph anymore.
The person who wrote that letter obviously watched Redskins film last year.
Keeping it real.
Well, it's a team that can't get out of its own way because you have to know. Wait a minute, when we do this and we put these in the mail and send them out, and it gets cut, you know, the Washington Post catches wind of this. Immediate news story that again, you know, we're not showing support of your quarterback. What team wouldn't put the quarterback?
He's not the quarterback.
But he's not the quarterback. So I do think these sort of letters don't get sent out without approval from either Jay Gruden or Bruce Allen or whoever it is. And the reality is there's a 50-50 chance at best that Robert Griffin III's a week one starter there. So why put him? They're not going to put. You know,
I just might avoid, like, I'd write the letter in a different way.
Exactly.
You write four players and leave him out. You realize, as a PR guy, this is going to blow up in our face, right?
I get it. It just, to me, it just recognizes the obvious that he is totally up in the air, Robert Griffin III, in terms of his status.
Right.
They don't really count on him for anything.
By the way that they wrote this thing drove me nuts writing the post because they capitalized general manager and head coach. It's like a grammatical associated AP style guide nightmare unfolding with this authoring.
Real quick, around the room, RG3, week one starter in Washington. Mark, yes or no?
No.
Wes?
No.
I'll go yes, just because I don't have a better option. I'm going yes.
I'm
going
to go yes, too. But it speaks to exactly why he's not.
You're
in that
taking
paragraph.
The field. That's
no,
my
I'm
move normally.
I'm going to say they're going to do everything in their power to make him the week one starter, and then he's going to do everything in his power to play like he has been for the
wow.
last 2 years.
What
and they can't overcome that.
What a difference in off seasons between wrestling rhetoric on RG3.
I didn't even know what sport he was playing last year. It wasn't football.
All right, that's what's happening. By the way, this was the highest – one last thing. This is the highest rated Super Bowl ever. And I bring that up because usually in the whenever they you learn that nugget, it's the show beats the MASH finale. And then Wes tweeted today that he watched like 4 episodes of MASH this morning, which I thought was really funny.
I hated that
this
show growing up.
This morning you watched MASH?
I watched MASH this morning. Wow. I hated that show growing up because it was always taking the place
after
of like a cartoon.
Yeah,
there could be some great cartoon on at their school, like, you know, Scooby-Doo or Tom and Jerry or...
Matt, whenever MASH came on in my house, that depressing song, that was when my mom was like, it's over, TV's done. It's because
right.
It's nighttime. It was the end of the television watching.
WPIX in New York would use it as filler, so after a Yankee game, if they had
right.
to get to
right.
the next show, they would put on MASH for a couple hours, and that's when you knew to switch a channel.
I hated that song, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Suicide is painless.
It just was kind of...
Brings on many changes.
I just saw that, and I felt like MASH was attacking me. Like, no matter what channel you switch to, that stupid song
Wes
was on.
Wes is the only friend I have that would watch MASH.
Totally curious
I
move, but I
hated
admire.
It, yeah. And I gave it another shot this morning,
oh,
and I thought it was excellent.
People love
the
it.
The writing is fantastic. The acting's good. It's a great show.
So Wes sleeps 12 hours, wakes up at like 7 a.m., and he says, you know what I want to do this morning? Watch 4 MASHes back-to-back.
Well, that's normally when I would just turn on Game Rewind and knock out a couple of games, and I felt some freedom. I'll just
well,
get a MASH a shot.
They got the coaches filming this game up.
I'm taking a break.
If we're doing TV reviews, everyone, if you're an NFL fan and you like comedy, watch the Key and Peele Super Bowl special. That was really funny. Legitimately good. TD, did you see that?
I did not. I haven't seen that show yet, though.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Cool. But MASH is good, though. All right. Let's move on. Let's go back to the game. Super Bowl 49. One last thing, but in Greg's case, many last things. So let's talk about, because we did a nice 43-minute show, nice and tight, after the game from the press box at University of Phoenix Stadium. So let's now maybe touch on things that we didn't touch on Sunday or that have come up since then. And Greg, since you have a lot to get to, you get us going. One last thing.
Well, I'll start with the Dante Hightower play on the second-to-last Seahawks offensive play of the game. Marshawn Lynch runs for 4 yards, gets it down to the 1. This is where coach's film does help, because if you watch that game from the overhead angle and you stop it at any point right after they give the ball to Lynch for about the next couple seconds, I swear if they run that play 8 times and they have it blocked like it is, or 10 times, he's going to get in 8 times. Everyone's blocked. He's got a big-time lane. Hightower is getting not held but blocked by Okung, and he's the only one with even a chance. Hightower dives to the left of Okung, kind of shakes the tackle, gets Lynch in the knee, and gets him right down. So if Lynch breaks that tackle or Hightower doesn't disengage and kind of make a last-chance diving effort, if you watch how that thing was set up, it looked like he's going to walk it. And this is Lynch, a guy who breaks tackles routinely, and Hightower just kind of knifed down and hit him right in the right spot in the knee. It's an amazing play that got lost, and it's understandable, but it got lost, and, you know, I'm going to be thinking about that every time I see Dante Hightower make a play for the rest of his career. He's the guy that did that.
It's fair.
Thank you, Dante.
And if they gave Lynch the ball again, he was going to score a touchdown.
Probably.
But, yeah.
But it's something you couldn't have appreciated live. And they actually co-credited the tackle with Hightower and Ayers, but Ayers just kind of fell on him after it was all over. It was an unbelievable play.
Your thoughts, gentlemen?
Go ahead, Wes.
Greg nailed it.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Well done, Greg. Mark, your turn.
You know, I remember when the Seahawks, young Seahawks team, lost in the Falcons to the playoffs a couple years ago, and the anecdote that came out was that even in the tunnel in the stadium walking off the field, Russell Wilson was already coming up to people being like, we're going to get back. We're going to get back. You know, and I thought, you know, I don't know if I buy this. I get it. You're all manic and you're a great student of the game and everything. But I'll say, you know, that defeat was young in his career. After what happened in this game, when you find out that he sat down with Carroll and they talked for ages after this thing, and he was texting him at 4 a.m, and he came out, I thought, on Twitter and also just in his statements in general. I loved Wilson's Not every Seahawk handled this game well, and we got that firsthand with Michael Bennett dealing with Dan. We got it with the fight at the end of this thing. But Russell Wilson, who has to set the tone for the offseason, and maybe you think it's cheesy. I don't. I thought that he's a great leader, and there aren't a lot of – we've seen with guys like Manziel and other quarterbacks that are young that don't know how to be a leader. If I'm a Seahawks fan, I think they're going to get back to this game, if not next season, certainly down the road, just like the Patriots came back from Super Bowl defeats because of what they have in Russell Wilson, in their coach, and a couple of core players that I think genuinely – this is a talented team, the best team in the NFC still, and I think Wilson is going to win multiple Super Bowls.
Just, wow. Just to back up Mac's point there, a lot of times the
–
Mark, take ours out of anything you need to.
I like that.
The Patriots are the team often compared to the Spurs, right? But this is one scenario in which the Seahawks are in almost an exact same situation the Spurs were in the 2013 NBA Finals. I know, Dan, you don't like cross sports.
No, I do like
them. He does. Yeah. He's the one that does like
it. Okay.
You got to pay. But this is Mark. How are you, Dan? He's the host.
How's it going? I am not Brian Billick.
Gotcha. Okay. Who's DJ here? No DJ?
No.
What am I doing here? Either way, point is the Seahawks have a star just like Duncan who's level-headed, who can see through this hardship and then hopefully come out better next season.
So in this, that's Duncan, fair. Wilson, Jeter, Brady, I like it. I like where we're going with all this. Odell Beckham, Michael Jordan. Well,
thanks, DJ.
And they're a really young team. They were one of the youngest Super Bowl champions ever. Somehow the Patriots' average age is the youngest Super Bowl champion of all time, which is crazy.
They got a ton of young
players. By the way,
which is crazy to me.
I'm totally on board with that. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I'm on board with it, too, because so many of their great players are signed long-term.
Things will change when Russell Wilson becomes the highest-paid quarterback in the league.
Oh, sure.
So there will be more challenges. But Russell Wilson is funny. He's cheesy, but in a good way.
Yeah. You know,
here's a tweet that he sent out on the 4th. Is that today?
No. That was earlier in the week.
Good job. That was yesterday. Wednesday, I'd rather be hated for who I am than loved for who I am not. And then - Kurt Cobain. And then Russell Wilson feels like he needs to hammer this home. Nirvana, lead singer.
Well, all right. Let's get out of there with the Nirvana lead singer line. We don't need it. That's not the tweet I was referring to.
So he's a dork, but he's a leader and a great young player. Yeah. I think he'll be back, too.
Because when I think of inspiring quotes for leadership, Kurt Cobain's the guy I'm going to go to.
All right. Well, we did not go down.
I love Nirvana. I'm just saying it's a little weird.
A little too soon, though. You know. Come on. Moving on. Wes.
My first ever concert was Nirvana.
Really?
That's
good. You're a good rocker.
Mine was the Little River Band.
In 1812.
They're a group. Wes, they're a group, by the way. Not a band. No.
I know there's a difference there. They're an outfit.
While we're here, Mark, what was your first concert?
Blues Traveler. Don't remember any of it.
In 1986, I was a six-year-old boy. I saw the Monkeys and Weird Al Yankovic.
I'm not counting ones like Jones Beard.
Yeah, how about as a
I mean,
an adult. Then it's Cake and Counting Crows at the Beacon
Theater
in Manhattan. All right, Wes.
Give me a little bit of a wide berth here.
Okay.
Just take a minute. Okay, my one more has been, not only is this the greatest Super Bowl, it's ridiculous to say any other Super Bowl is. And let me explain why.
Let's hear it.
I agree.
Let me
explain why. Going into this game, 50-50. Henry Hodgson talked about this on the Damashek podcast. On the NFL.com poll, he's never seen it this close before. 50-50. The two best coaches in the league, two great teams. You have one dynasty for the last 13 years. You have another one that has a chance to be the next great dynasty with four or five Super Bowls in a row. This is what's at stake. You go into the game, Patriots take control. It's like the Packers in the NFC title game. They're taking control, but they're blowing opportunities. At one point, Brady's got 14 completions and Russell Wilson has zero. I mean, it's just total control. Seattle battles back in. Then the Patriots get the Gronk touchdown. It looks like they're going to have like major control going into halftime. Russell Wilson, brilliant, brilliant 29-second drive with Pete Carroll dropping his lower extremities on the field twice going into halftime. Totally different game. Seahawks take control. You think the Patriots are out of it. Three out of the five of us on the podcast Sunday night thought the game was over. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady, epic fourth quarter, two touchdown drives, 13 of 15. Final drive, 8 for 8, two huge plays. Julian Edelman gets knocked out almost by Cam Chancellor. Just one great play on top of the other. Final drive, Malcolm Butler makes a play. Brandon Browner makes a play in the end zone. Malcolm Butler makes another play, but Kearse makes the David Tyree Antonio Freeman catch. Two plays later, Malcolm Butler makes the Ray Allen three.
Analogy.
Just in a span of 30 seconds, you've got two epic history-changing plays. And Malcolm Butler, that was one of the greatest defensive plays in the history of football.
Good job by Tom Brady offering up his truck, too, to Malcolm Butler because he deserves it. The more you watch that play, the more amazing it is.
The IRS is taking $18,000 out of it.
And you can argue a few different things, but there's really no argument that that was the most impactful play in Super Bowl history. Never has a Super Bowl had one play that was any bigger than that. And for everything that you said in terms of the flow of the game and the greatness of the players and then the historical meaning, it really is the greatest. How could something have
Tyree
been
catch
than
was
that?
Pretty crazy too though.
That's true. Yeah.
The quality of
the quality of play was better in this game. A lot.
I agree with you, and I think it helps that we were in person to feel how electric it was. And from another lens, like we all had guests and my wife Simone and her friend Tracy, they were up near the front of the stadium. And driving people crazy, they told me, because there were so many big plays for either side that they didn't just clamp down on one team. And they couldn't name 18 of the guys you just mentioned. But it was so exciting. They were cheering for every big play. And people around them like, wait, what side are you on here? But it was that kind of a game where you couldn't even figure out who you were rooting for if you were neutral, because it was swinging in both ways.
Even this thing where TD doesn't like Tom Brady, but he's admitted – that montage when Brady's coming out of the tunnel.
Oh, forget it.
Goosebumps, baby. Goosebumps. He looked like a warrior.
The Cleveland Browns melted entirely from my consciousness. I was like, this is football like this. Tom Brady in that moment, I think we all were a bit transfixed. But, I mean, that is like, it was like a god coming down the tunnel.
I really
knew the moment and totally owned it.
That made me feel like a fan.
I don't know if people even saw that on TV.
With him coming out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Getting all fired up. The place went nuts.
Oh,
and Mark, I loved it. Really did get Mark on the side of the Patriots, cheering like crazy the whole game. But
Mark's actually thinking about just jumping ship right now.
Well, no, I'm just in a very dark place.
Come aboard.
I will also say it was also badass when the Seahawks were coming out of the tunnel and speaking of Nirvana, they were playing Smells Like Teen Spirit. And Wilson's walking. He's walking like a rock star, like down the tunnel, leading his guys. I thought that was like a super cool moment in general, both sides, that maybe you don't get that experience unless you're there.
Well, and they show Belichick, and the place goes crazy with boos.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like Darth Vader.
All right,
it was an electric atmosphere the whole game.
Let's keep moving, because we do
have.
Do
you have some more things?
I have things.
Well, let's hear you.
And you have more things. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so I wanted to hear
you. I'm guiding the show properly.
Okay, good.
I'm doing my best for you, boss.
I'll lay some blame on the Seahawks and Wilson and Pete Carroll that for whatever.
Wait, did you skip over me and go to your next one?
This whole point was I was trying to let you set up, and you just
I was
going to
set myself up before you got in your second.
Oh, I didn't know. So I thought this was like a basketball play where I just kept
passing.
All
right, passing. Go ahead. Do yours, and then I'll do mine.
Now I feel bad. Your take.
All right. Okay.
Come on, guys.
Make it quick, Dan. Greg's got
enough.
Cut that all out. Thanks.
Greg is just so excited. Anyway, Gronk. Let's talk about Gronk. The summer of Gronk has already begun. You know, after playing a great game and then having a big touchdown catch, he's now done the tour. By sunrise, he was already back in L.A. or in L.A. doing various things, including the Kimmel Show, and he had the greatest Gronk quote ever before he did a reading from his erotica novel, and it was so great, I had to ask TD to cut it.
I mean, I haven't read a book since ninth grade when they made me, like, you know, you don't raise your hand, but they call on you. A mocking to remember or whatever. Mockingbird to remember.
Right.
Yeah.
He went to the University of Arizona, folks, by the way.
This is going to be a great next 6 months or so with Rob Gronkowski, who, you know, God bless him. He stayed healthy, had a nice Super Bowl, and now has a ring, and now is going to celebrate. So I'm just happy that we got the Gronk, the happy, explosive, stupid Gronk, just to enjoy. That's great. What I took away.
Great job chugging on the parade route. I sent the video to these guys. Just the movement, the accuracy on his, it just brought me.
It's almost like he's done it before.
College,
right? Yeah, he's got experience, you would think.
Greg, your turn.
I'll bring up some criticism of the Seahawks that hasn't been talked about for whatever reason too much, and that's that they burned two timeouts on that final drive for no reason. So you want to kill Pete Carroll for that call? I honestly think the way they burned those two timeouts was more inexcusable. They used one timeout after an incomplete pass with 1:50 left at midfield. Can you ever imagine Tom Brady or Bill Belichick or a lot of teams that are well coached burning a timeout off of an incomplete pass in that scenario? And then the other one was after the curse crazy catch. They took so long figuring out what had just happened and getting up to the line of scrimmage that they had to take a timeout then. But it was at the end of the whole clock moving. So that's two timeouts that no one's really killed them for, and that showed a lot of inexperience.
Well, one thing, though.
They just couldn't line up for two straight plays on the biggest moment of your lives. They couldn't line up in time on two different plays.
Totally fair. And, like, I mean, the one way they would have escaped any criticism at all is had they run Lynch on that second play. I mean, oh, how brilliant that they didn't leave any time for the pay. I mean, so many things
sure
translated to our view of this game at this point.
Right, but I don't think there's any justification of taking a timeout when the clock is stopped.
Well, by the way, flip side, and I know you're
at the 50-yard line, no matter what. There's no, like, oh, okay.
I hear you. I know Bill's your boy, but and he had a kind of a thing no one can argue, Bill, but he explained why he didn't take a timeout because he liked the look that
right.
he – but honestly, 99 out of 100 times, you take that timeout to give your offense a chance. I understand that's not the case here, but, I mean, really.
Well, no, he admitted. He admitted when you look back, he's like, you can make the argument I should have taken a timeout. He admitted that.
He said, well, he sort of did. Then he said, but
he said,
listen,
maybe I should have, yeah. but the way I was looking at it was,
and that would have
reason.
Been killed if they had lost this game.
And that's why it's great to be the winner because you don't get killed. It didn't work out against
right.
you, and that's why Pete Carroll will never shake this and nobody will ever think of Belichick. Did we talk about – the poop celebration by Doug Baldwin?
I think you just did.
I don't care for it.
It was, you know, NBC didn't even air it. They cut away from it, Doug Baldwin. And then after the game, it was one of those weird juxtapositions because I think did he have any other catches besides that?
No.
And the only way he got open is because Revis got picked by the referee. And, you know, he was there and he was, you know, somberly talking after the game at a riser, and it was just like, it was just weird that this guy in front of the biggest TV audience ever in the biggest moment of his career, I think we talked about this, decided to do a fake poop.
That's what he wanted his legacy to be.
It's kind of
make a duty on the
and
field.
It was an Adam Carolla bit, wasn't
it's
it?
It's kind
before
of amazing.
It was for his?
Right. I listened to Carolla for a long time, and he actually came on our air, NFL Network, a few times and did this with Rich Eisen, just saying, wouldn't that be the greatest celebration ever that you pretend to take a dump and use the football as, you know, a prop, essentially.
This I don't get it. Why is it funny?
I don't know. It's just stupid. We're all
The internet immediately, I saw places that said it was brilliant and were pissed at NBC for not showing it. I don't know. That feels like more like an NFC divisional playoffs celebration.
I like that, right?
What about
Super Bowl, come on.
What about it is funny? I just don't get it. Like, Carolla is a comedian, so maybe he sees something
the
about
way
it.
He brought it up.
I don't understand why.
Well, poop is inherently funny.
Yeah,
I think that's where it all kind of stems from, and it does take the sport less seriously when you do that. Maybe that was where it was at, but that happened. Is there anything else?
I'm not going to like
Joe Buck. You guys have anything else?
Here,
yeah, I got you.
I got a question for you guys when you're all done.
TD.
Okay.
You know a question? All right, let's talk about the parade. We had Julian Edelman with the Sherman poster. We had LeGarry Blount with a shirt. And my question is, I'm off of trash talking. Playing sports.
What was the shirt again?
It was beast mode, except it wasn't beast. It was a B word, though.
A female dog word.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And my question is, it's sort of funny how a lot of people call out the Seahawks, and some guys
enough with the Homer stuff.
This is not Homerism. They call out the Seahawks for being brash and whatnot and not, you know, being not having sportsmanship, but kind of quiet on the front with the Pats there.
Don't you think that what you do in a parade should be held to a different standard than what you do on the actual football field?
No, it's a good point. But do you think the Seahawks would be afforded that if they did that in a parade?
That's fine, but the Seahawks
reap what they sow.
I agree.
And they're
you.
Just grabbing stuff from people in the crowd. It's not like LeGarrette Blount was up at 7 a.m. You know, putting that T-shirt together or, you know, pasting a poster. You know, Edelman wasn't at home with his kids using a bunch of paste.
Well, we know
you
Edelman
know, someone
wasn't
in the crowd
seven,
hands
yeah.
him the thing and they
well,
hold it
somewhere.
Up. So it's like, you know, whatever.
Just a question. It's not a homer. It's just like, hey, it's kind of weird how people want to jump on a high horse. And
It also helps team. That they don't have to face each other twice a year like some of these.
I'm with Wes on this. I think in that setting, someone hands you a shirt and you hold it up and all of a sudden it's on social media. It's not like Doug Baldwin or Richard Sherman holding a faux press conference to show how funny they are.
The camera.
Dropping 2-4 on the camera. Like, these guys, they were easy to root against by the end of that game. I stand by that. I'm sorry, TD.
I'm just saying. Just pointing it out.
It's okay. You know, you have every right to do that. No. All right. That's it.
All right. I thought we were still going around.
Well, we. I mean, whatever.
Greg's got more points.
You got more? You got another
well,
one?
Well, he's savoring.
I am.
It is your moment.
We
go
actually
ahead.
Got through most of them.
Give us some Throne of Bees music.
You got all cut the chicken scratch.
You got one more. You got some Charlie Day scratch.
We got to the Lynch short yardage. We got to the everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Bedard had a good. Check out his piece, and I don't even know if it's up yet, but he was tweeting about it. He thought that was one of the best games he's ever seen Brady play, which I thought was interesting because he had two interceptions, and he's been very critical of Brady. But he thought the way that Brady won the game kind of from the neck up and knew exactly where to go, and there was not many open receivers each and every down, and this is typical of Brady. It's not like it's unique, but just the patience that he showed throughout the game that so few quarterbacks in NFL history could have ever done that. And the difference kind of between Brady, who didn't make a ton of big athletic plays or deep down the field, and Wilson, who had a great game and made a bunch of plays, is kind of stark. And for him to win it like that was impressive.
Didn't Bedard actually write that it was one of the best games he's ever seen by Brady even before the fourth quarter?
Right. That's what he was saying, which it's interesting. And I did watch – I haven't watched the whole game over again on
– You will. Show.
I will on coaches. I tried to get through it before this podcast, but just almost everything that he's learned throughout his whole career ends up being on display in this game because there weren't a lot of open receivers and,
good point.
And he knew exactly where to go.
And how about some credit to Josh McDaniels, who came up with really one of the few game plans we've seen that took advantage of Seattle's strengths even as a secondary and their speed, and I ate them up. And when they got down, you know, bad teams move away from the game plan. They stuck right with it. You said that right during the game. They're not going away from what was working early on. I don't think they would have won this had they veered away from that early success.
Didn't the Patriots – Brady had more pass attempts than I think the Seahawks had total plays.
Well, I mean,
wow.
Russell Wilson only had two pass attempts deep into the second quarter. All his real estate came from then on.
They controlled – yeah, they controlled it. By the way, my – what was that thing we did on Friday? Confident call was the Patriots will have long, slow drives and limit the Seahawks.
Very
plays.
Good.
This was your week, Greg. There's wow. just no way around
all right.
it.
All right, I'm done.
By the way, we should bring Greg back down to earth about a little sandwich wager from NFL Honors.
That's right. I owe Dan.
Wait, I get to explain this because you're having such a nice run. Give me something. I have nothing. Wait, can I have some Throne of Ease music for this? We wagered a sandwich about how many MVP votes J.J. Watt would get. We came down at 8. I said, he'll get at least 8. And Greg said, I'll maybe get 2 or 3. And guess what? He got 13, baby! High octane sandwich for Danny boy.
Wait, wasn't I in on that?
I think it was a personal group.
I think
match.
It was just Dan and I.
Yeah.
I thought it was Greg versus the
you
field.
You wanted to jump on later, but I said no.
Okay.
The wind started blowing the wrong way on that one.
That feels to me like Greg buys lunch for everyone.
I was wildly confident on that one, too, and wasn't really that close.
So anyway, we will settle that up. So at least it got something out of it.
If only we had done a sandwich on Bobby Wagner winning an MVP vote. That would have been a sesser.
All right, moving on. Before we get out of here, Wes... The great scientist, they call him, put together his list of the top 25 free agents of the 2015 class, a list that you could check out at NFL.com/around the NFL, unless there's a Vanity Earl.
Slash news also works.
By the way, every science teacher I've ever had in my life would be laughing at the description you've painted here of me as a scientist.
All right, so we got to be out of here in 10 minutes. So let's get through this list, and I'm gonna do the top 10. I'm just gonna roll it out there, and then Greg or Mark, you can jump in what you think about it. 10, DeMarco Murray. 9, Devin McCourty. 8, Randall Cobb. 7, Mike Upati. 6, Julius Thomas. 5, JPP. 4, Demaryius Thomas. 3, Dez Bryant. 2, Justin Houston. And number 1, free agent, according to Chris Wessling, and Ndamukong Suh. Thoughts?
Can't argue with the top 3 at all. It's interesting. Like
Dez behind Justin Houston was interesting to me.
Justin Houston, I mean, did you put out this yesterday, Wessling, that he didn't have a penalty all season?
In the last 2 years, Jerry Hughes has 20 penalties. Justin Houston has 0.
I think pass rushers always make a hill of money and I don't think Dez Bryant's going anywhere, so that I don't know.
He had maybe the best non-JJ Watt season for any defensive player in the last 4 years. I'm trying to come up with one because he would have won Defensive Player of the Year a lot of years. I mean, sure, he was good against the run.
And he averaged more than a sack a game the year before, too. I mean, this guy's he's right up there as the best pass rushers in the league.
I think it's funny that, you know, a guy like DeMarco Murray, whether he stays or goes at number 10 with the market for running backs that we've seen in general, I wonder if he's finally the guy as a running back that will make, you know, a significant amount of dough, because these guys are just getting nothing year after year.
He was the hardest guy for me to rank because the first 3 months of game film is just incredible. He looks fantastic. He's making defenders miss. The last month and a half, he's not quite the same back, and he has 500 touches. Teams aren't going to want to pay for that, and they already don't want to pay for running backs. He's a hard guy to grade.
And he seems to think he's only going to go and make a lot of money. He's not sounding like a guy that's
well
a deal.
I don't really blame him, seeing as NFL media insider Ian Rappaport has reported the Cowboys' standing offer was 4 years, $16 million, which I firmly believe is a slap in the face to him. He carried their offense.
Wes, you're a football head. So a lot of people that will look at Sue's numbers might not understand why he's ahead of everyone on this list. But tell me, what makes Ndamukong Suh so valuable to the middle of defense?
Well, I don't think casual football fans can look at defensive tackles numbers ever and gain – you can't glean anything out of looking at numbers for defensive tackles. He pushes the pocket. He's the best three technique tackle in the league. I know Greg likes Gerald McCoy, but Suh has been healthier and is better against the run. He dominates. There'll be five or six games a year where he just picks up the opposing center and guard and just pushes them out of the way, dominates games.
As a fellow wannabe scientist, we are going to collaborate on a larger.
You're top, in the lab, Greg. Don't sell yourself short.
Top 101 free agents later, and I can predict some people's ranks are changing. Here's my list of people which will have lower rankings when the final list comes out, because I'm going to drop them. Mikey Iapati at 7. Maybe he even is the 7th one. If it was on who's going to get paid the most, but he's coming off a bad year, I thought.
I think we had Alex Mack higher than Mikey Iapati, and Mikey Iapati has been a more dominant player.
I don't know. Mike Iapati. Jared Odrick, 13. That I was really – where did that come from? He seems like an average starting player.
He was just below Pro Bowl level last year. And guys who can play 3-4 defensive end and 4-3 tackle get paid.
A sometimes starter in the league.
What?
He hasn't been a starter his whole career. He's kind of like a, you know.
He was an every down player last year.
You already moved Jason Worlds because I really complained about how low he was initially. Brandon Graham, 17. That one I'm more just curious. What's the reason?
I actually had him higher and then moved him down a little bit because I thought maybe I'm just too high on him.
That is high on Brandon Graham.
On a per-snap basis, he's always been one of the most efficient pass rushers in the league. He's been a poor fit for their defense. He's better in a 4-3, I think.
Greg attacking the integrity.
I'm not attacking.
I like Brandon Graham. I'll go to the barricades.
I want to check in on that one. That one blew my mind. So
I might move him up on my next.
Further laboratory work is necessary.
I noticed that you have Jordan Cameron rounding out the list at 25. Don't you have to kind of know where you are to make this list?
Well, that's why he's this low, I think.
That's horrible.
On game film alone.
That was unprofessional.
On game film alone, I would have Jordan Cameron like top 12. I loved what I saw out of him, especially 2013. But you can't – how can you predict what teams will do with three concussions?
Isn't it really only 2013? Because if you're going to pay for him and you're going to get what you got this year or any of the other seasons, you're getting a guy that plays about six games a season, and you can't rely on him. I mean, it's not just concussions.
We overrated Michael Finley last year in the end. You know, that was a more serious situation than – Cameron, as far as we know, but that would be a big risk. The two most interesting names on this entire list are pretty low to me. Greg Hardy, number 19. Right now he's on the reserved, what do you call it, list?
Commissioner's
exempt list. But he will be a free agent eventually when he's allowed to play again. Just on pure talent, he's in the top 5.
Bitch kitty pass rusher.
No question.
But that's not what NFL teams grade free agents on.
I get it, but just pure talent, he's number 5. He's not the greatest citizen, but someone's going to take a gamble on him, no doubt, and they might get a great, great player.
Somebody's going to take a gamble on him after they explain to their fan base why they're doing it, but I don't think they're going to have to pay a lot of money to take a gamble.
Maybe not. So it's an interesting guy to watch. And then Nick Fairley, 22. When he is right, and that's, I guess, not all –
half the time?
Yeah, not all that often. I mean, he's pretty awesome. I mean, he's much better player than Jared Odrick or Brandon Graham has been.
When C.J. Spiller's right, he's also another one.
Yeah.
Hey, question for both the scientists and Mark. if Darrell Revis, because we know...
As Mark gives you a dirty look.
just as, like, we know... What, Mark, are you a scientist in the lab?
I actually did
I thought
not.
We always watched them
I didn't
below.
Give you a dirty look. I'm, they make me very uncomfortable, the two of them.
If Darrell Revis ended up on this list, and I know the Patriots have rights until the end of March, where would he be if you dropped him into this?
I actually had him on this list and had to take him away after I had our editors go through it with a fine-tooth comb.
Mm-hmm.
I had him fifth.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Dan making the point this morning that Revis will be a New York Jet next season.
Now that I think about it, I'm looking at this list. Sue, Houston, Dez, they're all definitely ahead of Revis. Yeah, I'd put him fourth or fifth, Demaryius Thomas and him.
You know who I like on this list, Wes? I think it's a fair spot at 18 for Torrey Smith. But I feel like if you put Torrey Smith in the right offense, I don't know, maybe Indianapolis or something, he could go next level in his game. I love me some Torrey Smith.
I could definitely be convinced to rank Torrey Smith over Jeremy Maclin because I feel like Maclin is a product of his system. Smith's only problem is he's not going to catch many passes. Greg and I talked about it. He's a bit of a Mike Wallace one-trick pony kind of guy. Mm. You send him on go routes and let him get a pass.
But Mike Wallace is one of the highest-paid receivers in the league, so Torrey Smith might get paid huge.
Mike Wallace runs a 4.33 or something. I mean, he's faster than Torrey Smith.
He's also a malcontent.
I was gonna say he's the highest-paid receiver, but he never should have been.
What about Byron Maxwell when he goes to a team where they're – putting him on the front of the tickets and stuff. He's our number one corner. I mean, do you trust him as a number one corner in a bad defense potentially?
I trust him as the number two corner in Dan Quinn's defense.
Right. If he goes there to Quinn or Gus Bradley or someone that knows how to use him, there's no reason to think he can't be really effective.
All right. Anything else, gentlemen, before we get out of here? From this list, Chris, great work. And I'm sure we're going to have a lot more free agents. When you guys get together and start banging heads to figure out the top 100, it's going to get ugly.
Post combine, we'll have a lot of
sweet,
by the way,
Earl, sweet music gets made.
Yes, Earl Thomas, just something that came across while we were up here, going to be out 6 to 8 months with that shoulder injury. He's having surgery, so that's a lengthy rehab for a guy. That'll take you right to almost the start of the season.
Well, eventually. It could take you in October if it's to 8 months. But he'll quick.
Good quick math there on the months by Sessler.
Home run.
Underrated mathematician.
Might not be a scientist, but
right.
Mathematician,
brah. All right, so that's it for Thursday's edition of the Around the NFL podcast. I think we're going to do two shows next week, too, and then eventually we're going to ramp back up to three around combine time. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, on Tight Day behind the glass. Until Tuesday.